And you're tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. My name is Old Lady Scar Arms, and I have on the phone Liad Kanporowicz. She's been doing anti-occupation work in the West Bank for nearly 3 years. She's also been a part of a joint Palestinian-Israeli campaign against the building of the security wall in Israel since April. Hello, Liad.
Hi.
Hi.
It's good to be there.
Thanks so much for joining us today. It was very late in Israel right now. So, Liad,
that's all right. Thanks for having me.
So, Liad, can you give us a little more information about your background before we dive into talking about the action that took place a few days ago?
Sure. As you said, I've been activist for nearly 3 years against the occupation, mainly in Israel, also in Palestine and the West Bank. I've moved to Israel after living for several years in the United States right before the beginning of the Intifada, and that's when I started my work. And I've focused mainly on direct actions with Israelis and Palestinians in the West Bank, as well as direct actions inside of Israel in the last few years.
Were you born in Israel?
Yes, I was.
And what area do you live in?
I live currently in Jaffa, which is a southern city of Tel Aviv. I'm originally from Kfar Saba, which is a neighbor city to Qalqilya. Between the two cities, the wall now comes between.
Mm-hmm. So can you describe to us just a little bit first, before we talk about some of the actions that have recently taken place, what your position is on the wall? When I introduced you, I described it as a security wall. There are some people who describe it as an apartheid wall. How do you see the wall?
We definitely see it as an apartheid wall. We see the wall as not being erected for any security purposes, and it is something that is very clear from the construction of it and the path in which it takes. While nearly $2 million a kilometer is being spent on a wall, which will eventually encompass about 600 or so kilometers of West Bank land, it is very clear that if Israel truly wanted to make the wall for security purposes, it would do so on the Green Line. Nevertheless, they choose to do that on Palestinian land and take a very large proportion of the West Bank, nearly 30% of fertile land, as well as major water resources. Another thing is, in many places, there is currently a fence through which many Palestinians still can go through, can go under. It is very easy to pass through this wall. It is very obvious that the wall is not being erected for purposes of the fence. It's not effective for that. What it does do is form a de facto border, a new border for the Israeli state, and one that will cut the West Bank into two areas with no geographical continuity, thus making it impossible to form any Palestinian state on West Bank land. And we believe that that is the true purpose of the wall. This is why we oppose it.
Does it also bring some Israeli settlements in the West Bank into Israel, basically?
Absolutely. I mean, it takes in major settlement blocks such as Ariel and Alfe Menasseh into an Israel, thus becoming a part of Israel. I mean, when you were looking at a map of where the wall is stationed to pass by, you can see that it includes the maximum amount of land, including settlements and agricultural land, and we're talking about good, fertile land, and minimum amount of Palestinian population. Thus, the Palestinians are, in return, closed in a very limited sort of matrix of fences and walls, which will make transportation for them impossible. And again, the expansion of Israel into as much of the West Bank as possible is truly the goal of this, and security truly does not play any part in this. We've seen this several weeks ago when there was actually a shooting of a 9-year-old girl on an Israeli highway. The person who has committed this shooting is a Palestinian who entered from Qalqilia, who managed to crawl underneath the wall and go into an Israeli highway in Israel and shoot into a car and kill an Israeli girl and go back into Qalqilia unharmed. We can see that it is very ineffective as far as security. And as I say, it's not for security purposes that this wall is being built. The people of Israel are being lied to when they are being told that this wall is being built for their security.
Well, Liad, what if the wall isn't bringing security, and that's not the purpose you're arguing behind it? There is a desire for security among the Israeli people, which gives the wall idea and the wall's construction its support. What would bring security if this wall isn't going to?
Well, we can first start in saying that, again, if the purpose of this wall is not to bring fence, then security lies elsewhere. Generally, I, as well as the group of activists that I work with, believe that security will come through peace and through justice and through fair and just agreements between the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority or any body that represents Palestinian people justly. And this will take an initiative on the part of the Israeli government to currently obviously have much more position of strength than the Palestinian Authority to see that such justice prevails and to have a desire to end the conflict and not the creation of more borders. Obviously, if people have a very strong desire to commit suicide bombings or to harm the Israeli public in one way or another, putting up a fence or a wall which will annex so much land and will steal so much land from farmers, enable or disable Palestinian transportation, and ultimately lock people in their houses, this will not give the Palestinian people a desire to cease any violence and retaliation towards the Israeli people. If anything else, it will increase it, because they will not come from that.
Liad, there are those who argue that the Palestinians that are committing these suicide bombings are fanatics who would not stop with just having their own state in the West Bank and Gaza, and that if they did achieve a state in the West Bank and Gaza, that they would continue these bombings because they want the whole land of Israel, and that the only way to deal with the Palestinians is to basically remove them from the West Bank and Gaza and eventually have that area be Israel. And why is this unacceptable to you? Do you really think that Palestinians involved in these violent acts would cease if they had their own state?
Well, I see the cycle of violence as being truly something that's cyclical. And I think people who have suffered, Israelis who have suffered the most violent retaliation from Palestinians, see that it does happen right in retaliation to the Israeli army's actions in the occupied territories. It is not spontaneous. It is always a response to the military actions that's being taken against them. So that's one thing. I mean, obviously, we don't agree with any violent means that are taken against a civilian population. Generally, we do believe in people's right to defend themselves, but when you go into Israeli land to kill people, it's not acceptable, nor does it change the situation or bring the situation to any better position. However, I mean, we can say that for the time being, as well as time has shown us, that only Israel's willingness to seek justice as an integral part of a solution for peace between the two states is the only thing that will bring true peace for the area and for a long-term solution. Any more violence that will take in against the Palestinian people, as against constantly have shown, brings more retaliation. I mean, you cannot kill everybody around here or remove them in any one way. There always will be at least one person left, and that person will seek out revenge so long as revenge is sought against him. That we attempt to take nonviolent means to solve this, and we urge the Israeli government to seek this justice and to look for it in a part of a solution, because that is truly the only way for both sides to live here in this region.
I'm speaking with Liad Kanporowitz. She lives in Israel, was born there. She's been doing anti-occupation work for nearly 3 years, and she's been part of a joint Palestinian-Israeli campaign against the wall since April of 2003. Liad, you work with Palestinians. How does that work? I mean, it seems like all the information we get here in the West is that Palestinians and Israelis just want to tear each other's throats out. How do Palestinians and Israelis work together? What is it like to work with Palestinians?
Well, I'll tell you from the example of the village of Mas'ha, the village which we've been working with closely since the beginning of April now. It's been great and very challenging experience, but it has been very, very fulfilling. The village and its inhabitants, many of which are farmers who are on the verge of losing or have already lost significant portions of their land to this wall, have been incredibly happy to work with us and have in fact invited us to work with them. I mean, it's been challenging on a cultural level. Obviously, the cultural gap is very great, but we find that perhaps we are fairly unusual Israelis in our quest to seek a just solution in order to look not just at the Israeli side but at the Palestinian side, but that we have a lot in common with them politically. It has been we've created a protest camp in the village of Mas'ha. The place has served as an information center for visitors. Over, I think, 2,000 Israelis have visited there, as well as many, many internationals and Palestinians and media people as well. And the place have been staffed since April, 24 hours with both Israelis, Palestinians, as well as internationals. It has been a great opportunity for us to sit and to overcome a lot of cultural differences, to learn about one another, and to plan strategically with one another, politically, our moves. We've also seen that on many issues, I mean, truly because of the two people's fate are so tied to one another, because we do, whether we like it or not, share this region, we share this land. Our interests in many cases are the same. I mean, I would again give example with this wall. Palestinians see it as something that is tragic to them, because in the example of Mas'ha, for example, they will lose 98% of their land. The farmers will lose 98% of their land, which they use for their livelihood, and that is a great tragedy. On the Israeli side, we spent tons and tons and tons of money that will not go for any social purposes nor for education, and Israel has suffered tremendous, tremendous economic cuts in the budget in order to sponsor those things which are allegedly done for security measures because of this plan. So Israelis suffer from it too, something that ultimately we don't think will benefit either side. So it's been really great working with Palestinians, and we constantly realize our positions. Whenever we are working in the West Bank, we realize our positions as visitors. We respect the Palestinians, and they're very, very helpful, and they're very grateful for help. We enjoy it very much.
Is it ever challenging to be face-to-face with someone, working with someone that you think may support or have supported in the past violence against Israelis, that against your family? I mean,
I'll tell
you
one
live
thing.
In
the first of all, the village of Mas'ha has been is a very, very unfortunate case of a very innocent victim. Specifically, no one since the beginning of the Intifada has attempted or participated physically in any violent acts, neither in the territories or inside of Israel. We know this to be a very non-violent village, and one that worked a lot with Israelis, not just on political means before the Intifada. So on that level, it hasn't been that great of a challenge. We do see eye to eye on many levels. I do have to say that spending a considerable amount in the West Bank, I do understand the concept of the right to resist much better. I don't think that if any Israelis or Americans, for that reason, could see a whole line of tanks entering their neighborhood and coming down and starting shooting, opening fire on children, destroying their streets, calling curfews on a regular basis, putting checkpoints and disabling their ability to travel, for example, arresting people that are innocent or have not been brought up to trial in the middle of the night, night after night after night. I do believe that the public that lives in such places will want to get up and resist and retaliate against such behavior. And I don't think that there's any need to apologize for that. So it's important to understand where the Palestinians come from. I mean, obviously people that support acts of what is called terrorism or acts of violence against innocent and unarmed civilian Israelis are not people that would even want to work with us. These are not the people that want to cooperate with us. But there's plenty of willing Palestinians who do, and we see them a lot. They are, I would say, initially very surprised to hear that there are Israelis who don't support the army, for example, don't want to join it, believe that the job of the army is wrong and that Israelis should not serve there. And they are very surprised to find out that there are Israelis who politically think enough like they do and believe them and like to give them autonomy and like to work with them. And so it's not difficult to form that amount of trust. One more thing, there's many internationals who are working in the West Bank as well as the Gaza Strip for the last few years now, and I would like to say that it is much easier, from what I can see, for Israelis to work with Palestinians than for internationals. After all, we come from the same region, and we generally can speak a common language, and it's fairly easy for us culturally to make that, to cross that bridge and to work with one another. So it's not as difficult as it seems.
Liad, what brought you to oppose the occupation in the first place? You were raised in Israel, and what kind of upbringing did you have? And if it was Orthodox or conservative, how did you come to a different position? Or were you raised were your parents opposed to it, to the occupation?
I'm coming from a fairly unusual family, I would say. I mean, my father basically left Israel at the beginning of, well, not beginning, sometimes during the first Intifada, because he was a soldier, and after everything that he has seen during the course of the Intifada has made him understand that he is fighting civilians, Palestinian civilians, unlike the rest of Israel's wars, which has been fought more army to army, and these reasons made him want to leave Israel and not support it as a state. My parents are fairly anti-Zionist, and so I would like to say that, again, I'm fairly unusual, and I'm not a very representational case of the typical Israeli. Israelis generally get a very politicized sense when they are very young, because we live in a very political climate. I didn't understand when we left, when I left to live in the United States, when my dad left, and I came with him, of course. I didn't understand why this happened. I only understood it many years later. I also didn't understand certain things like militarism is something that is very deeply ingrained into the Israeli public. So on one hand, I would say my parents were fairly left-leaning. On the other hand, by the time that I was 11, for example, I did not understand why my dad would even want to resist the army. And it seemed a natural part of my life that I myself would join the army, though I never did it because I became more politically aware when I became older.
What changed, and why have you done anti-occupation work for the last 3 years?
It's a fairly complicated question. I mean, it was truly a process that I feel very fortunate to go through, and I think that most Israelis don't go through it. I came to Israel at the brink of the current Intifada after living for several years in the United States. As an Israeli, I constantly was aware that there is a different side, there's another side other than the Israeli side, but I was constantly aware of the fact that I wasn't seeing it, and I had this sort of a quest to see it. I started spending a lot of time in the occupied territories, and what I saw really shocked me, the amount of cruelty and the amount of all the brutality of the occupation, which is unimaginable, and more than anything, just how unbelievably close it is to Israel physically, and how close it is to me, and to the fact that most Israelis don't see it. When I came to see it for myself, and come to see the fact that most Israelis do not see those things for themselves, I started beginning to have a desire to show Israelis those things, and I understood that the more that Israelis would come to the West Bank, or to, since they can't enter the Gaza Strip, and the more that they would come to work with Palestinians, the more they will be able to understand these things for themselves, rather than just hear about them, which don't have quite as big of an effect. And I've been working on these things ever since.
And I'm speaking with Liad Kahn-Porowitz. She's been part of a joint Palestinian-Israeli campaign against the wall since April of 2003, and she's also been working doing anti-occupation work for nearly 3 years. Liad, let's talk about some of what happened last week. On Tuesday, August 5th, there was about 47 international solidarity movement or human rights activists that were detained in the morning, and they were part of a group that was attempting to block the demolition of part of a Palestinian family's home near the village of Masha.
And Masaya.
How do you say it?
Masha.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
The building had been slated for demolition by the Israeli military, and this was because it lay in the path of the wall that Israel is building on Palestinian land. The peace activists, according to a press release that I have, were violently thrown on buses by Israeli soldiers and border police. Two internationals were beaten. One, a U.S. citizen from L.A., was repeatedly kicked in the stomach, and they said at the time that the person may have sustained broken ribs. Anyway, they went ahead and bulldozed the part of the home that they were intending to. There was detainees from quite a few countries. It looks like Ireland, England, Japan, Canada, Sweden, Denmark, Italy, France, Israel, etc. Now, they were all released, correct, except for one Palestinian man who then you and some other Israelis tried to get released. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I would like to give some background about the purpose for this action. First of all, the man whose house lies in the area in which the wall will be built, a portion of his house was to be demolished. However, the rest of his house will lay in, quote-unquote, the wrong side of the fence. In the village of Masha is sits right on a border with the illegal settlement of Elkana. And his house will fall on the settlement side of the fence. This will mean that once first fence, later wall, will be built, he will be on the wrong side of the fence, and the wall. And in order to ensure that he does not enter the settlement, there will also be another fence built around him to make sure that he doesn't go anywhere. So he will be closed in. Obviously, the situation cannot last very long, and he will be forced to leave his house, and he will lose his house to this wall. This is what the internationals were attempting to stop. And constantly, our constant demand is to stop the building of the wall in this area. And if this wall must be built, make it on the green line. Well, it will not confiscate any land. The Palestinian who was arrested and was kept in jail was released 2 days ago. He will be brought to trial on October 21st on charges that he has been the organizer of all the mayhem and the resistance to the Israeli army entrance to and closed military zone, as they call it. It's a regular procedure. I mean, every time that they would like anybody to clear the area, the military comes in and declares an area a closed military zone. Obviously, declaring somebody's house as a closed military zone where nobody invited the army, and yet the internationals who are staying there protecting his home were invited. There seems to be something a little bit skewed with that. The following day, a group of Israelis, myself included, I believe it was 27 Israelis, went to continue the resistance of the building of this section of the wall and of the wall that is being built on this man's land.
How many Israelis?
27 Israelis.
Okay, thank you.
And I mean, it was very quick and rushed, and we got it together as soon as we heard that the internationals were no longer there, and that we are now being called to action.
This was
and
the
we
following.
Came to block the bulldozers with our bodies.
This was the following day, Wednesday,
yes.
August 6th. And
yes.
Was part of this not just trying to prevent the continued building of the wall in that area, in that section, but was part of it also to call for the release of the Palestinian who was still held, who hadn't been released?
First of all, the Palestinian, again, he is not, more than anything, his name is Nazih Shalabi, and he is a man whose, his family, himself, and his brothers are about to lose their entire agricultural land, which will be on the side of the wall that is being annexed into Israel. He's been very, very active on this matter. We know, we've spoken with him, and we know that his desire is that the battle against the wall will continue, and so we came to stop it with our bodies. Another thing is that, again, the camp, which has been going on since April, 24 hours at his presence as well as the presence of other Israelis and Palestinians, 24 hours a day since the beginning of April, was now kicked out and pushed out and beat down by the army. And we wanted to ensure that actions in the area against the wall were still going on.
These are all nonviolent actions, correct?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. We don't believe in violent action. We don't see any purpose to them.
Nazih has not been involved in any violent acts. He's been detained.
No, he has not even been involved in any active resistance, only passive resistance. Again, he has been in the protest camp, just sitting there and giving tours about the wall and giving out information.
So the Israelis,
very actively.
Nonetheless, the Israeli army and government is charging him with being somehow the ringleader?
Being the main organizer for any resistance to it, which, again, the army sees as illegal. This is this man's land. It's this man's village. And they're seeing as sitting on his own land as an illegal act and as having company as an illegal act, as entering areas that are his and his farmland as entry to closed military zones. And an organizer for actions which the Israeli army deems as illegal, which which would not hold in the other situation.
So on Wednesday, August 6th, you went in to this area, and what happened? 27 of
you? There were 27 of us. The bulldozers were working to clear the land, to make a path for the wall, and we simply circled the bulldozers and climbed on them in order to block them. Again, non-violently, we never pushed, we never touched anybody. We were just sitting around them, and we managed to stop their work for several hours until eventually the Israeli army, working in collaboration with the settlement of Ariel, their police forces, came and they arrested 24 of us. This is 24 including an AP photographer who was taking pictures of the action.
Who happened to be Palestinian, right?
Who happens to be Palestinian, yes.
Okay.
Again, they were very violent towards us. We were resisting. We don't fight back, but we were resisting. We were resisting the arrest.
You mean you went limp?
They packed us on buses.
You went limp, or when you say you resisted, what do you mean? You went limp?
We don't move. We don't cooperate. We don't try to fight back, but we sit joint hands, and we don't let the army drag us away. Nevertheless, we don't kick. We don't bite. We don't punch back. All we do is yell slogans with political content at them. And eventually we were taken away one by one, 23 of us, as well as the Palestinian Associated Press photographer, into a bus where, again, we were being taken into custody, into arrest at the Ariel police station of the illegal settlement of Ariel.
Now, my understanding is that when you arrived at the scene where the bulldozers were working, at least six bulldozers, that you were carrying some signs with you and chanting?
Yes.
What did the signs say, and what were you chanting?
There were several signs, if I remember correctly. Borders don't lead to peace, and theft of land do not lead to peace or to security. This is in rough translation. And another one is, these are not fences, these are ghettos. And again, it's all around the message that the fence or the wall will not bring peace to us. If anything, it is an obstacle to peace. And like the occupation, it is not means for peace and justice in this region.
One eyewitness to this protest said that someone was carrying a sign that said, "Does this remind you of anything? The fence equals terror. The fence equals land theft equals death." Is there people in your group, in the group of Israelis, the 27 that came, that maybe feel this is reminiscent in some ways of attacks on Jews in the past?
Well, the ironic part in all of this, there certainly are, though we tend to don't make any references to attacks to Jews through the Holocaust, because we know that it's something that can be used on both sides. The ironic part to both this is the action took place in the night of Tisha B'Av, which is a Jewish holiday commemorating the ruining of, trying to think of the name of it in English, of a great and big holy site.
You can say it in
Israel,
Hebrew.
Of the Temple Mount. And again, just as we condemn any sort of ruining people's livelihoods and property on the Jewish side, and as we commemorate it, we also would like to remind the Israeli government that we condemn actions being taken against the Palestinians. Another important thing to remember is that if you guys over there have been following the news, Sharon, Prime Minister Sharon, has ensured Bush and has made a statement that he will ensure that no Palestinian's livelihood will be greatly damaged or hurt by the making of this wall. And as we see the facts on the ground, it comes in direct contrast to his statement. We would like him to uphold the statement and to change where the route of the wall to fit his promises.
Mm-hmm. So what ultimately happened? 27 of you were arrested, and
24 of us were arrested. Again, it's 23 Israelis and one AP photographer who is Palestinian. We were released, being that we are Israelis and we are Israeli citizens who are Jewish. We have the privilege that internationals as well as Palestinians don't have, and that is that it is not in the best interest of the Israeli forces to detain us, to arrest us, and to hold us for very long. It causes too much of a mess. It costs them too much money. It's not in their interest. And another thing, it brings up too much attention, too much political attention. 22 Israelis is not something that are arrested, is not something that happens every day. And the Israeli public starts asking questions and starts applying pressure on the government and starts wanting to find out why these people were arrested and why, what were they protesting, what were they defending, and why this action took place in the first place. And this is something that the Israeli government doesn't want. I would like to say that while I know that the issue of the wall has been fairly mainstream and has been hitting the news in a pretty serious manner in both the United States as well as Europe, from what I can understand, in Israel, while it has been pretty big and mainstream news, most Israelis don't understand, nor the news provide any coverage for what this wall is really about, what it looks like, where it will pass, what this means to the Palestinian people, and why both the Palestinians and now the U.S. government oppose it so much. I mean, they're left really in the dark about this whole issue, so they can't really take a stance against it. The only thing that they're being told is that it's for their own good and it's for security purposes. They don't even know how much money is being spent on it, which is their own tax money, which is, again, a travesty, considering that Israel now is currently in the worst economic position that it has been in 50 years. This is where the Israeli tax-paying citizens' money is going towards. And they, again, they would not want to know that these people were arrested because it would put too much pressure on them. So we were released. It was very late at night when we were released, but it did happen. Most of us cannot enter into the West Bank for 15 days, which is a general sort of punishment or agreement, if you will, or condition of our release. For our release, and again, we have to stand by it or pay a big fine. But I can assure you that it will not stop us, and whether people have the 15 days in which they can't enter it or whether they can go into it right now, we're not going to stop. We're not making any plans to change or stop our campaign. And in fact, we're continuing it, and we're getting all of our energies back together to continue coming to Mafha, as well as doing actions inside of Israel and to raise awareness and to join the opposition against this wall.
My understanding is that the 47 internationals that were arrested were taken to Jerusalem and were told that if they return to the West Bank and Gaza, they'll be deported. And also, one of the eyewitnesses to this, who is actually someone from Santa Cruz who is there right now, her name is Tracy DeAngelis, sent me an email describing that when the 47 were arrested, that they were dragged, not carried, and that when 25 or 23, I guess it was, Israelis were arrested, they were not dragged, but you were carried by about four or five soldiers each, because the visuals of Israelis being dragged in the press might be a bit too much for the Israeli public. Is this true? Is this what happened?
Of course. I mean, obviously, as Israelis, this is something that, and as Israeli activists, we are consistently very, very aware of our position of privilege. I mean, while the international activists came and they were cleared very violently and arrested very violently by the Israeli army, and very quickly, it took 3 hours for the army to come in and arrest us Israelis. The conditions of release for the internationals, saying that they cannot enter the West Bank or Gaza for an indefinite amount of time, while the Israelis only received 15 days, and some of them, namely the women, did not receive this condition for their release at all. So, I mean, obviously, the more privileges that we have, this is what happens when we are Israelis and we're Jewish. This is the reason that no Palestinians participated in their action, in the action that we did. Many Palestinians came and supported us and cheered us and brought us water while the time that we were sitting and occupying the bulldozers, and consistently told us, we would like to join you, we want to come and join you, but you guys know what will happen if we are arrested, if something happens to us. And this is why us Israelis choose to act out of this position of privilege and use it to our advantage. We know that internationals are less privileged than us, and we see it as our obligation to be more active and to be out there and to use it, because we will suffer a lot less punishment than the internationals, and certainly a lot less punishment than the Palestinians. And we tend to use this position of privilege.
You're tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking with Liad Kanporowitz. I'm speaking with her from her home in Israel. She's been doing anti-occupation work for nearly 3 years, and she's also been part of a joint Palestinian-Israeli campaign against the building of the wall since April of 2003. And I just have a couple more questions for you, Liad, if that's okay. I know it's late there. Just two more?
It's all right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When you and the other 26 Israelis occupied a bulldozer and basically were trying to prevent the continued building of this section of the fence, and I don't know, maybe you were also partly trying to prevent continued demolition of the home that we talked about earlier. Work stopped completely for about 1.5 hours, according to a witness. Is that accurate? How long did you stop the work of the bulldozers, and what do you feel you accomplished by this action?
Well, I'll tell you something. It's not just us Israelis. It's something that has been joint effort on the part of the internationals, the Palestinians, and Israelis during the course of this week. It has actually been a lot more successful, the fact that we stayed and we occupied this bulldozer and we kept it from working for the hours that it did, for several hours, because we stopped work for that day. The issue is that the contractor who is building this section of the wall, there are several contractors and each one of them builds a different section of the wall, is being given a certain amount of money for an amount of time they set out, and that's it. Any day which they exceeds the limit which they set themselves out to be, they're losing tremendous amount of money, because the activists, both the Israelis, the internationals, as well as the Palestinians, have been able to stop or disable, at least for parts of the day, work in this this section of the wall for at least several hours each day for the last week now. The contractor who is building the wall has lost a lot of time and has lost a lot of money. And the other thing that is done, again, unfortunately, we have to pay a high price of arrests, specifically internationals who are no longer able to enter legally anyway into the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. It has brought much more media attention to this issue and to the fact that there's resistance, and to the fact that Israelis are resisting this wall too, and not just Palestinians, and are feeling that this wall is against their personal interests. And again, like I said before, that security has nothing to do, the security of Israelis have nothing to do with the building of this wall and with the presence of this wall. Unfortunately, I would like to say that it is economic interests, of course, that is the motivating force behind this. I know that Israelis were, and strangely enough, were treated much more harshly than they normally would have under other circumstances, due to the fact that the contractor lost a lot of money. He exerted tremendous amount of pressure on the Israeli army and the police through the Israeli government to treat us RSDs with difficulty and to make life as hard as possible for us as a form of punishment for him losing a lot of money. So that's the downfall of that.
Liad, where can people go to learn more about the situation, or is there any websites or an email or some way people could assist you in your work or at least learn more about what's happening and somehow plug into what's going on?
Sure. I would recommend the Gush Shalom website. They have a really nice website as well as a slideshow about the wall where people can see the route in it. They can very clearly see where the wall is scheduled to be built and exactly in what ways it will interfere with Palestinian lives and, in fact, like I said before, disenable a Palestinian state from ever existing by cutting up any sort of geographical continuity the West Bank currently has. The email address, or I'm sorry, the website for Gush Shalom is www.gush/line shalom in two words, .org.il. The other one is the Israeli Indie Media website. That's www.indiemedia with a Y, that is one word, .org.il. You can also check out the Palestinian website. Just enter into the Israeli website, the Israeli Indie Media website, and follow through the links.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really glad that I was able to get through to you. I really appreciate the time that you've given to this interview.
Thanks a lot for having me.